Before we commence, today's let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate One, the One who found the solution to end all suffering, the Supreme Buddha. To do so, let's take a few moments to chant the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Today, I want to start off by telling you all a quote that I read quite recently. And it's a quote by a very famous comedian slash actor who had, won several awards and so on and so forth. But I think it was because of his fame and because of the fame and reputation he's received. Had he said such amazing or a profound quote? He says, "I wish everyone was rich and famous, and they get to do everything that they ever dreamed of, to realize that it was useless." And this was a quote given by Jim Carrey. Now, I really wanted to tell you this quote because I think it's a very, very interesting quote, especially when it's given by someone who we believe to be successful. He says, "Well, you know, I wish everyone is rich and famous, just like I was. I wish everyone works so hard to do what they dreamed of, just like I did. And then finally realize it was, it was useless, that it wasn't the way." Because we're very, very focused on one thing and one thing only. We are all focused on one thing. And what is that? To be happy. That is something that you, me, you know, even animals themselves, it's something that's been almost encoded into our minds, that we have to search for happiness. But the way we search for it differs from person to person, from creature to creature. It will always differ. But as humans, we always look up and we say, you know, if I was rich, if I was famous, I would be happy. It is me, it's when I get this amount of money. That's why, you know, we see young children work so hard at school. Why? So they can get a good job. Why? So they can get a lot of money. For what? So I can be happy. I think I'm very fortunate to be able to talk to very young children, right? And it's really, it's sometimes actually really heartbreaking to see how focused they are on what they think is going to make them happy. And they put so much time, so much effort. So the other day I was talking to a young girl who unfortunately was going through some exams, it wasn't even important exams. It was a mock exam for an important exam. So it's not even important. But she was having mental breakdowns, anxiety, panic attacks. Putting herself through so much. Because why? I have to pass these exams. Why do I have to pass exams? If I don't pass exams, I'm not going to get a good job. I'm not going to get enough qualifications to get the job I desire. If I don't get the job I desire, then I'm not going to be happy. And if I'm not going to be happy, what is the purpose? So this is why it's really, I think this quote was something that when I read it, it was something that really stuck with me. You know, I wish everyone to be rich and famous and do everything they dream of to realize it's not the way. Because which path should you take to be happy? What do you need to do to be happy? Because living through life, society, people around you, and everyone has their opinions. To be happy, do this. To be happy, do that. But yeah, if we were to go and ask them, are you happy? Their answers are, I'm not yet, but I will be. What about if you ask people who are almost close to the end of their lives, are you happy? No, because I wish instead of doing this, I did this. It's funny because as we grow older, we get filled with more and more regret. I wish I had done this. I wish I stopped. I didn't stop doing this. I wish I started doing this. Why? Because you realize as we're going further and further and we have less time, I have made a mistake somewhere in my life. And now we play the blame game and we try to point fingers and say, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. It was because of this, because of that. It's because of him, because of her. And we try to blame because why we realize by going on this path, I'm not going to be happy. I think this is why we have to really ask ourselves, what am I doing to actually make myself happy? What am I actually doing? Like the other day, we talked about how much chocolate we have to eat. Chocolate, we have to eat, how many was it? 7,000, I think, bars of chocolate in a person's lifetime. And yet, if you were to ask them on their deathbed, would you like another bit of chocolate? They'll say what? Of course. No amount of money can bring happiness. Honestly, you can argue saying the more money you have, the less happiness you receive. How is that? Because the more money you have, the more you have to protect. The more that you are scared. But you can argue, say, you know what? I can put all my money in my bank. My bank will protect it. But yet you still live in fear. See, if you had 101 things, you have to look after that 101 things. The less we have, the less we have to protect. The less we have to, you know, be scared of that something's going to happen to it. But yet we think, no, the more I have, the more happy I'm going to become. See, this is the thing. We have to ask ourselves this question. What am I doing to truly be happy? How? What am I doing right now so I can truly be happy? Because if we don't know how to truly become happy, we're going behind a red herring. We're going on a wild goose chase. Trying to find it, but every time you come near it, it's gone. Every time we come near it, it goes. No amount of nothing that we can do, that we've done so far, has given us permanent happiness. Every happiness that we've received is very temporary. But yet we work so hard for it. Okay. Let's say you want to go on a vacation. Okay, let's take a place, a destination. We're in Sri Lanka, so we can't use Sri Lanka. We're going on a holiday destination to Hawaii. Right? Well, technically, it's still a tropical country. Well, we live in a tropical country. Let's take it to a different country. Let's say, do you want to be in the cold or the hot? Which way do you want to be? You know, in a hot country, a cold country, in a tropical country, what sort of country do you want to be? We live in a tropical. Do you want to go to another tropical? Okay, let's just take Hawaii, because that's the easiest example. We want to go to Hawaii. Because you want to go to Hawaii, what do? You can't swim there. Right? You have to, you know, go there. To go there, what do you need? You need money. You need to have the need. You have to have enough money to get there, to live there for a bit, to enjoy and experience everything, and then what? Then come back as well, because a holiday, you have to go and come back. If you just go, that's not a holiday. That's, well, migration. So to go, you have to have money. For that money, what do you have to do? For that money, what do you have to do? Well, money does not grow on trees, we know that, right? It has to be worked. It comes from the fruit of your hard work. So you have to work. Work 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, You earn the money at the end of the month. And you have to look at your own expenses, right? How much you're going to actually use in that month, how much you're going to save for the holiday. 1 month goes by, 2 months go by, 3 months go by, and now you have enough. And after 3 months of working hard, you travel, stay for about a week, come back, and now you're happy. Or you believe that you're happy because I took a 3 month, I worked 3 months to get a week holiday. Not realizing it was because I wanted that week holiday did I work that 3 months. And yet you always complain saying, I have to go work today. I have to go work today. Why do you have to go work? Because I want to go on a holiday. I want the holiday, therefore I have to work. I have to work hard. Now, I'm not talking about the basic requirements, right? So we need money for food and the basic needs. But I'm talking about the need to go on holiday. See, if you were rich and famous and got everything that you dreamed of, you go to the place and then you realize what? Hawaii is good for a week. Just like Sri Lanka is good for the first year of your life. After a year, you think, maybe Sri Lanka is not the place for me. Because I remember, because we used to come to Sri Lanka on holidays every 1 or 2 years. And I think because we came so frequently, whenever someone told me, like my friends would tell me, you know what, I'm going to go to Sri Lanka, the first question I'd ask is, why? Like, what's so special about Sri Lanka? But if you were to say, okay, you're going to go to America. Wow, you're going to go to America. Where are you going to go? To a city of the fallen angels, to Los Angeles or Las Vegas? Because you think there is what's going to make you happy. But someone who lives there? Why are you coming to Las Vegas? Why? Like, what is the purpose? Because it's going to make you happy? Well, I live there. I'm not happy. See, this I think happiness is almost like an illusion. It's an illusion that people, it's a mirage. That's the best way to describe happiness. It's a mirage. You can see it. The closer you walk to it, it disappears. You can see water. When you walk to it, it's gone. Same with happiness. Now, most of you know this. I can almost say 99 or 95% of you know this. that, you know, happiness is not in material objects. Happiness is not, I can't search for happiness. You know this, but yet, even though you know it, don't you continue to search for it? Even though right now we know that, okay, happiness doesn't come from me going on holidays or all this. So we don't go searching for holidays. But let's say you're going for the alms. And somehow someone is offering cake. Don't you still feel that, you know, that cake, that piece of cake, that's going to make me what? Happy. You see, this feeling of pleasure that we receive by taking the things that we want, this is one of the things that actually hinder our journey to Nibbana. As in, I'm not saying pleasure is bad, but it's because of pleasure. Do we think, you know, I don't want to think about, you know, contemplate about Dhamma, because why? I'm going to receive something that's going to give me what? Pleasure. You know, right now, I want to enjoy this moment, right? I'm with my fellow Sila Shravakas or Srila Shravikas. I'm going to enjoy this moment. We're having a good conversation. I don't want to contemplate. Why not? Because I'm in an environment that I enjoy. Because we don't see what pleasure is at that moment. At that moment, what is pleasure? If we don't see the real nature of pleasure, and if we don't see, when I say see, it's not something that you'll physically be able to see. You see, pleasure is something that is, no, I'm not against pleasure, right? I'm not against pleasure, right? I'm not against happiness. Please, I wish all sentient beings to be happy, right? That's a wish that I have deep in my heart. I'm not against happiness. I'm against people not knowing what they're doing to be happy. So as I was saying, we are all working, we are all doing things to be happy. But we don't really know, we don't... It's almost as though when you feel pleasure, everything else is swept under the door, under the carpet. That we forget the amount of pressure that our mind was in. And because when you feel the pressure, so example would be, let's say you read, so it could be a very simple one. So in the monastery, we may not get big, let's say for example, no one's going to come up to you and say, oh, you've won a prize, a car, and you're not going to be, yay, I got a car. You're not going to be happy about those sort of things. But very small, minuscule things can still bring you pleasure. Now, these pleasures, we have to understand where it comes from. Because we forget where it comes from. Because if we were to look at where it comes from, the pleasure itself loses value. The pleasure itself loses value. Let's take a very simple example. Right? But then even if we were to take an example, no example is universal. Tell me one thing that everyone enjoys. Tell me one thing that everyone enjoys. We all enjoy chocolate? No. Do we all enjoy sugar? No, I know lots of people who like savory more than sweet. We all enjoy a 7-layer mattress. No, I know people who rather sleep on a, like a plank of wood than on a 7-layer mattress. Tell me one thing that everyone enjoys. There isn't. We can say about basic needs, because basic needs are almost the same for each and every one of us, because we all have a body, and the body needs what? It's food, It needs clothes. It needs shelter. It needs medicine. And in a very basic level, that's something that our body needs. Beyond that, it varies from person to person. Beyond our basic needs, it always varies from person to person. So I can't say something that's universal. Universally, everyone enjoys this. But if we took an example, right? So example that we can feed in the monastery, right? Let's say in the morning, you come for the almsgiving, and let's take the example of you're going home, and it is someone's birthday, right? And so they or their family has bought cake and puts into your bowl, your plate. We, looking at that, immediately feel what? Wow, cake. Wow, I got cake. Now, you're not going to be like over the moon, like jumping up and down, I got cake, but you still feel what? Cake. Got some cake. I'm good. I'm happy. Now, again, I have nothing against cake, right? If cake makes people happy, I wish everyone to have cake. But you'll see, right? So, cake. You receive cake. No, we feel this small relief, or this small bit of, oh, I got cake, it's good. Now, to get that feeling, what needs to be there before? What needs to be there? To get this feeling of, cake, I got cake, I'm happy. What needs to be there before? What needs to be there is, you must first want to have cake. If you don't want to have cake, seeing or receiving cake, would it make you happy? So we know, for cake to make us happy, the one thing that we really need is what? The want for chocolate, or the want for cake. If you don't want cake, will cake make you happy? No, there has to be the want. There has to be the want. So when you want something, what do you feel? You feel this uncomfortable feeling of, yeah, I need it. I have to have it. Now you can say, I didn't know we're going to have cake today. You know, it was a surprise to me. But yet, when you received that cake, if it gave you pleasure, what had to be there is what? Vexation. That means at that moment, when you received cake, it's a relief from that pressure. Which means what? In your mind, you were still searching for what? Cake. Now, it wasn't that you were wishing for cake for your entire life and you received cake in that moment. It's more that you remember, when you see cake, you remember how much you want cake. And that moment this mental pressure arises. And then relieved. So at that moment, you feel pressure and then relieve it. Because remember, this is talking about a single mind here. We're not talking about 100 minds. We're talking about a single mind here. In a single mind, it realizes that what I'm perceiving is what? Cake. Then it remembers, oh, I like cake. Then it feels what? This pressure. This mental stress for cake. And then realizes I've received it. Therefore relieving it. And therefore you now feel this, I got cake. That's why if something was to happen to that cake, we may not feel like angry, but we feel this slight disappointment. For example, you've got a cake, you've got some cake. Someone bumps into you and the cake falls onto the floor. Now, the first thought you'll get is, oh, what a waste. What a waste of what? What a waste of cake. A good slice of cake. So you're not angry, but you are disappointed. Why are you disappointed? Let's take an example with children, right? Let's say you have served to your child's plate something like let's say you have served a child a bitter gourd salad, right? So a salad that they don't like eating. Someone bumps into them and part of this salad falls onto the floor. Are they disappointed? Would they think, what a waste of food? They'll say that 100%, but inside, what do they feel? Yes. Look, it fell onto the floor. What are we going to do? We can go and serve some more? No. I've served already. I'm not going to have any more. So if it's falling onto the floor, which is making you disappointed, then shouldn't those two be equal? But when a cake falls on the floor and when the salad falls on the floor, why do they feel different? One feels, what a waste of cake. The other one feels, it's on the floor. I can't do anything about that. We're going to have to leave it there. Why a difference? If it's falling onto the floor, that's an issue. It isn't. It's more that what do you want? What is bringing you pleasure? What will bring you pleasure? According to that, another great example that I really do want you to, when you consume your meals, especially in the monastery, we have everything put together, right? I want you to be very aware of where you're, or of what you are reluctant to take more of. Now, I'll explain, right? So let's talk about dakineyo, because we all know that the menu for dakineyo, right? What's for dakineyo? Dakineyo almsgiving, what do we normally get? Rice. Forget rice. We got rice, we got dal, and then we got soya. Okay. Now let's say, for example, let's say there's more, but let's say you like soya. And the example that you like soya, or you have that small liking towards soya. Just be aware of how much you take from the soya. How do you make it try to last as long as it possibly can? Or so you try to take very little so it lasts throughout my entire meal. Do you? Because if you do, you're falling into a trap. What, I like soya. We forget about that, but you know, I'm gonna try to preserve the soya. Or, you know, something that you don't like. Like example, the bitter gourd salad. Right? Do you try to get rid of it as fast as possible? So you put like a big bit into your rice to get rid of it, so I don't need to think about it in the end. Because these are things that sometimes we're not really focused on. That it almost happens subconsciously. Things we like, we try to prolong. Things we don't like, we try to get it over and done with as quick as possible. Just remember, these are also what? Defilements. See, so whether you get cake or whether you get this salad, what we have to realize is, why do I feel this, I got cake? Or, do we have a bitter gourd salad? Okay, I'll take some. If we feel that, we have to find out, where does that feeling come from? Why do I feel that? Because if we don't know where it comes from, what that means is we are falling into the trap of ignorance. we are falling into the trap of ignorance. Ignorance meaning that you don't know why you are feeling what you are feeling. You don't know where it is coming from. Because if you don't know where it's coming from, it's going to come again. If you don't know why you're disappointed, disappointment will come again. If you don't know why you're angry, anger will come again. If you don't know why you're sad, upset, it's going to come again. This is why we have to understand, why am I feeling what I'm feeling? So going through in your day-to-day life, ask yourself these sort of questions. Put yourself through the test. So when you, this is why, you know, in the monastery, we are very, you know, we make sure we are very aware when we consume a meal. Why? So we focus on these problems. Because if you're not focused, you automatically do your habits. So you prolong the soya and you quickly eat the salads. And you're not focused on that. This is why, you know, that's why your teachers will tell you, you know, when you're consuming a meal, don't talk. Be focused on it. Be aware of what you're doing. That's why they'll say that. That's why, especially when the monks are consuming their meals, you can hear in the background what? Patisangha yoniso. To remind us to be focused. Remind us, okay, what am I doing here? How? What am I consuming? What am I actually doing here? Why am I reaching towards? Why am I trying to get rid of the things I don't like? And why am I trying to prolong the things I do? Or why am I trying to eat the stuff? So there are two types of people, or three types, right? One type will be put aside because that's the correct type. There are two types of people. Either they eat their favorite part first, or they eat their favorite part last. That's why I know some people who would have the dessert first, and some people who have the dessert last. See, ask yourself, why? If it's convention and you're doing it entirely because of convention purpose, you know, it has to be like this. Okay. If you're doing it because out of defilement, understand this is feeding ignorance. This is feeding ignorance. So coming back to where we started is, I wish everyone to be rich and famous to understand that that's not the way. Forget just rich and famous. You can put anything in there. You can put anything in there. Yeah, let's say something that I think as humankind we have deeply enrooted in us is, you know, to be really educated. Education is the root, is the path to happiness. That's why we push children to be educated. And again, I'm not against education, right? I, for one, I'm the opposite, right? I'm not against education. I'm 100% for education, for a different purpose, not to be happy. But I think we have this idea that, you know, if we are educated, then we're going to be happy. That's why children, I think we push children to get high educations, to go to the highest universities and, you know, to get a PhD in X, Y, and Z. It's not bad. However, if we ask them, ask a person who has a PhD, are you happy? I do have a PhD in quantum physics, however, you know, me and my wife were having an argument yesterday. Is that happiness? I have a really high paying job. However, my son doesn't come home on time. I'm training to become a doctor, and I'm gonna become one of the best doctors ever. But my mother's terminally ill. So which path should you take to be happy? So the question, what should you do to be happy, is flawed. Because there's nothing you can do to be happy. Because remember, happiness comes from within us. From our own understanding. It comes from our own understanding of the world around us. That's where happiness comes from. See, I do want to say this is, I wanted to talk about the basics because I wanted to strengthen our foundations. To build a building, you need to have a strong foundation. Without a strong foundation, buildings will topple over. So every now and then, we come back to the basics and we start to reinforce our foundations, right? Making them stronger, making them bigger, so we can grow and we can build more and more stories, right? Until we get a skyscraper. So this is why we always come to the basics, right? We always touch upon the basics, so we know we remember, and we apply as well. Something that Guru Hamdur always reminds us, and it's a very good point. Like, we don't talk about like the four great hells anymore. We don't talk about that anymore. It's still there, but we don't talk about it because why? We're very focused on, you know, jati, right? Abhisankara, right? And all these really, really profound teachings of the Buddha that we sometimes forget the basics. So I remember talking to some of our new Anagarikas, and I remember back then people would come and say, you know what, how can I stop going to the four great hells? But nowadays people ask, what exactly is sankhara? Rupa Vedana sankhara? What is sankhara? Well, it's a good question, but they don't have that base understanding. This is why every now and then we come back to the basics. We'll come back to the basics to strengthen the foundation so we can grow another story. So coming back to what we're talking about, so happiness. Where does happiness truly come from? So we know that happiness has to come from, for us, something to make us happy. We first need to want it. There's nothing that we don't want that can make us happy. I don't want it to rain today. It rains. Will it make you happy? No. If I want it to rain today and it rains, now it can make you happy. So for something to make us happy, there has to be something before that. And that is, I want. I want this to be there. I want this. I want that. Again, it could be a thing. It could be an event. It could be anything. But before it makes you happy, you must have a wanting. Now, we know one thing. Whenever you want something, what sort of thoughts are going through your mind? Happy ones? What goes through your mind is this feeling that, okay, I need to get this. Right? I must get this. How am I going to get this? When am I going to get this? Who, what, where, when, why, how? Questions and questions and questions. For what? So I can get what I want. Now, you asking questions and putting and doing all that is putting yourself under so much what? Mental pressure. So we know the moment we want something, what's next? Vexation. Vexation. And then when we receive what we want, what comes up after that? Pleasure. So let's build on this theory, right? So for argument's sake, we're going to call it pleasure, not happiness, because I want to talk about happiness as well. For there to be pleasure, there needs to be what? Wanting. When wanting happens, there has to be wanting, vexation, and then pleasure. Everyone agree? But what happens if you don't get what you want? What happens if you don't get what you want? What happens now? What a disappointment, sadness, and oh, we'll do this. Got this, right? Negative, positive, negative. It's negative, right? You now end up with negative. Okay. Looking at the theory so far, for there to be pleasure, there needs to be a want. Whenever there's want, there is. But if you don't get what you want, what do you have now? Negative emotions. Are we happy so far? Anyone have any questions so far? No, it's a very simple model. Now, we want pleasure. But for there to be pleasure, there has to be, and there has to be. So if we want to get pleasure, what we are also asking for is some vexation and some negative emotions. Because without vexation, there cannot be pleasure. And when there is vexation and you can't relieve that vexation, what do you have? Negative. Okay. Once you get what you want, what do you feel now? Happy. Is that it? Is that all you feel? All right, let's take an example. Let's take a big example. Let's say you want a car. You're vexing for the car. You receive the car. You are happy. Is that it? End of story? What do you have now? You have two things. You have fear. Fear of what? What will happen to my car? Will someone break into my car? Like, I remember, I think it's something that we used to do in the UK, is if there's anything valuable in the car, would normally hide it under the seat, right? Literally, I remember, you know, before we had like Google Maps, right? I don't know, we had things like sat navs and TomToms and I don't know, have you even, do you know what those are? Like, there's like, you type in the address and it makes the, it's basically Google Maps, but very old version of it. And I remember, like, we had to keep in the car. So we had to put it in a brown bag, wrap it, and then put it under the seat. Why? Because if it's out there, what will happen is, you know, we have the fear of someone. The device itself wasn't like very expensive, but if someone breaks into the car, there's lots of repairs and lots of fear of something's going to happen. Either you fear it, or else what? Or else something happens to the car. And now you come back to what? Fear itself is a negative emotion. Fear itself is a negative emotion. So technically, this should also be pointing at this. So if we were to underline everything that's negative, everything but wanting and pleasure is negative. Because even if you were to receive what you wanted, you still live in fear of it being lost. Now, not everything's like, you can say that, well, not everything's like that. What happens if I receive an award? You know, I got the award of first place in 100 meters. But aren't you scared that next year, someone's going to beat you? Still fear? What about you get a certificate? I mean, once you get a certificate, you are now scared of what? You work so hard and you get, you know, the scroll, the degree, right? You get the degree. Now, what are you scared of? Where should I keep it? Where is it most safe? If I hang it on my wall, that's a good place. So everyone can see. But what happens if I lose it? Fear. And if it's lost, grief. So no matter where we go, we end up where? With negative emotions. That means that this cycle itself is what? Wherever you start, where does it always end? Wherever you start, whenever you start, where does it end? Where does it end? Okay. I want something. Well, where will it end? I want something. Where does it end? I want a car. Where does it end? I want a house. I want to be rich. No matter where, because we want something to make us happy, but where does it always end? With negative emotions. So, is this a very pessimistic way of looking at life, that no matter what I do, so pessimistic, isn't it? No matter what I do, it always ends where? N. It always ends there. Like, there's no point of doing anything, because no matter whatever I do, you know, if I go left, I end up with N. If I go right, I end up with N. No matter what I do, it's going to be N. It's very pessimistic, isn't it? It's not pessimistic. You know, we all hear the example of how you show the difference between a pessimistic person and an optimistic person is what? The cup. If the cup's half full, you're optimistic. If the cup's half empty, you're... See, we are neither optimistics or pessimistics. What are we? We are realists. Meaning what? We see what is there. So we don't see the cup to be half full or half empty. We see a cup with water. And what can I do with this water? Am I thirsty? Yes, let me drink. We're not optimistic or realist. We're not optimistic or pessimistic. We're realistic. This is what's happening. That if this is not what is happening, tell me what is really happening. If this is not what's happening, tell me what's really happening. Is there something else, a part that we may have forgotten that ends us? So, you know, after N, there's an extreme amount of happiness. Is that how it works? No, it always ends off with end. This is why no matter what you do, this is why Jim Carrey says, you know, I wish everyone to be rich and famous, to realize that's not it. Because no matter where you start, it ends off with end. So what is the way to be truly happy then? What is the way to actually find happiness? I think the best example that comes to my mind is what an example that Guru Hanuman had given. This is like a mousetrap. If the mouse wants cheese, it falls into the trap. But if the mouse does not want cheese, will it fall into the trap? Now, it's not going to fall into the trap. So it's only if we go through in this cycle do we end off here. If we can find a way to stop the cycle, where will we end? Here? We will end somewhere else. We'll end normal. With nothing, we won't end here. We will not be here. So, how do we get rid of wanting? Now, I want you to think about, I want you to forget about everything that you've learned about the Dhamma, right? And I want you to think about this in a very logical way. Right, using logic. I want you to answer using logic. How do we get rid of wanting? Now, to get rid of something, first of all, we have to know what is it that we want. We have to know what is it that we want. See, we want something that will make us what? We want something it's almost like a trap here. We want something to give us pleasure. But the moment we want it, we end up here. We want something to make us happy. So it's almost as though we're in a trap here. Because we are wanting something to give us pleasure, but it doesn't. But yet we still want it. We want it because we feel pleasure. We want things to give us pleasure. So simply by understanding that whatever we want takes us to N, itself is getting rid of what? Wanting. By understanding that wanting brings rise, or everything that you want gives rise to N. I think the best way to represent N. Everything that gives rise to negative emotions. Right? No matter what you want, it gives rise to negative emotions. But what you want is to give it pleasure. So understanding that itself starts to weaken this bond to wanting. Because you realize what? No matter what I want, it's going to end up with negative emotions. So is the thing that's giving me happiness, giving me pleasure, actually giving me pleasure? And by understanding that, you know, pleasure comes from where? The relief of vexation. That pleasure is not pleasure, but it comes from the relief of vexation. Understanding that itself, what? Starts to weaken the strength of wanting. Now, what else do we want? What else do we want? See, this is why, you know, the Dhamma is a very, very logical thing. Right? It's a logical theory. But the thing is, the Buddha comes into the world to show this. But he doesn't just show this. He goes one bit deeper and says, what else do we want? We want everything to go the way I plan. That everything goes the way I want it to go. When we think this, what does the Buddha say? What does he say? Anicca. Now, Anicca itself, the concept of Anicca, this is why we keep Anicca in Pali, because the word Anicca has so many meanings. So if we go back many, many, many years, Guru Handru would have described Anicca as what? It's not the way that I want it. It's not the way I want it. Now, right now, when you hear this, the thought that goes into your head is, yeah, it's cause and effect, right? Da, 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 da. And right now you have an understanding. But back then, I want something and it's not going to go the way that I want it. So to get rid of wanting, so this is when we realize we want something because we think it's going to give us pleasure. That's one thing. Because we think it's going to go the way I want. Which means before wanting, for there to be wanting, there has to be what? These views. So before wanting, there has to be what? Before wanting, what does there have to be? Views. Views, what we normally call them is, we call it ignorance. But for this model, we're going to keep it views. Right? We have two V's, right? I'd like to put it as ignorance, but for argument's sake, we're going to put it to keep it views, right? We have views. Views give rise to wanting. Wanting gives rise to vexation. Vexation to pleasure. Pleasure to sadness or happy sadness. Oh, vexation to sadness. Vexation to pleasure. Pleasure to fear. Pleasure to grief, which is eventually just sadness, right? Or see, I don't want to say sadness, because it's not just sadness, but negative emotions. So these views are that, you know, that whatever I'm going to get, that this thing's going to give me pleasure, that things will work the way I want it to work. That's when, you know, we learn that things don't go the way I want it to go. So we understand that things don't go the way I want it to go. Then the question arises, what? If things don't happen the way I want it, how do they happen? And so the Buddha, and so the Dhamma says, well, things happen not because you want it, but things happen because of cause and effect. Right, so example, the car starting. To start the engine. If you have a view that it's, you know, that it's under my control, now you want it to happen, now you are vexing for it, and now you put the key into the keyhole and you turn on the engine. Right? If it starts, pleasure. If it doesn't start, unhappy. But if it does start, you're now scared that it, well, see, it's not that you're scared that it'll turn off, but you're scared that something will happen. That's why, you know, if you start the engine and you see, you know, the engine light turn on, you know, the engine light, you know, there's indicators that say, okay, there's something wrong with the engine light turns on, you feel really, like, again, disappointed or even upset. Because why? That's not the way that you want it to go. You wanted what? I get into the car, put the key in the engine, it turns on, and I drive to wherever I want to go. So yet you're still in fear that something's gonna go wrong. And when something does go wrong, you're in now what? Grief. So how does it, so the car works, the car, the, you can turn on the car because of what? Why can you turn the car on? Turn, start the engine? Because I put the key into the keyhole and turned it on. When I did that, there were causes that came together that started the car. So I put the key in the keyhole and turned it. So I had to be there. But the car doesn't work the way I wanted. The car works according to the causes. Now you realize that the world doesn't work the way I want it to work. The world works entirely because of what? Cause and effect. The causes come together, give rise to effect. But you also have another view. That I can do something. That I am the one who put the key into the engine, the keyhole. I'm the one who started the engine. I'm the one who's driving. So what do we think of? So when you think about that, then the answer, you, if you start thinking about these questions, right? If you think about it logically, well, I'm the one who put the key in the keyhole. I'm the one who started the engine. So I'm the one who's driving. But when you look at how it worked, you come up with the answer of what? Anicca. Meaning, I did what? Put the key into the keyhole, started the engine, and drove? Well, driving can only happen. Alright, driving. How can I drive? Can I drive? If I'm the one who's driving, why can a car break down if I'm the one who's driving? Because if I'm the one who's driving, I'm controlling the car. So how can the car break down? Can it break down? So for the car to be driven, that means all the thing that I can do is what? Turn the steering wheel and press the pedals. All thing I can do is steer, right? Turn this thing. Even steering itself. Are you steering? Are you the person who's steering? See, I remember growing up, looking how a car works. I was so confused. You know, you turn the wheel this way, but the wheels turn this way. How does that work? You're turning it this way, and then you learn that there's a mechanism that goes like this and it goes like that. And you're like, okay, so am I the one steering? No, only thing I'm doing is turning this wheel, and that turns the wheels of the car. So what am I doing? Turning the wheels. And then you go one step deeper and you realize, okay, I'm the one who's turning the steering wheel, right? Wrong. For me to be turning the steering wheel, what needs to happen? Causes have to come together to give rise to the effect. So for me to be steering, causes have to come together. So what am I doing? Well, I'm thinking about steering, right? Me thinking about steering sends a signal to the brain. The brain sends a signal to the central nervous system to the peripheral nervous system to down the neurons, down the nerves, down to the motor neurons, and da 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 da, and to the muscles. The muscles contract, relax, and now what? Steering happens. So I'm not steering. Instead, I am. I thought about steering. Right? I thought, okay, turn left. And that's why, you know, it all happened. So I'm the one who's thinking. Right? I'm the one who's thinking. Right? Wrong. Then the question is, okay, why did I want to turn left? Because the road had indicated turn left. And I had learned what when the road turns this way, I have to turn the wheel this way. Because I learned it. That's why it happened this way. So did I learn? See, you have to attack everything in a very, very systematic way. Don't give your mind a space to leave this I and say, okay, I is there. And everything else is cause and effect. Because your mind, because remember, because of the views that you hold, right? Because of ignorance, your mind always wants to put I somewhere. Put this fixed feeling somewhere. That's why, you know, it's very easy to say, you know, my body is cause and effect. My mind is cause and effect. However, there's a soul. That's who I am. There's a body, not me, right? It's just cause and effect. There's a mind, a brain, and a mind. Right? I won't draw a mind because you don't know where the mind is. There is a mind somewhere here. That's not me. And above all this, there's a soul. That's who I am. Again, we always try to put me, put I somewhere. Somewhere, so because it's because we have a view saying that, you know, I have to be somewhere in this equation. I have to be somewhere. That's why you have to attack this problem in a very systematic way. One after the other after the other. So it's almost like another great example that Guru Han had given. How do you wash a dog? How do you wash a dog? How do you wash a dog? First thing, what do you need to do? You first put the dog on a leash. Why should you put a dog on a leash? What happens if you try to wash a dog leashless? And I don't know if you ever had the experience of like running after a dog. Because dogs don't like taking a shower. Unlike humans, dogs don't like taking showers. Right? So you're running after a dog, right? Let's say this dog is leashless, right? And somehow you forgot to put a leash and you're now trying to wash it. What do you do? You try to corner it. You look for a corner and you try to corner it. And you get three or four people to cover all angles, and you start advancing. You know how armies put people under siege, right? They come from a distance and they slowly close in and close in and close in and close in and close in until there is no other option. That's exactly what you should do with I, the sense of self. Exactly what you should do. Slowly close in and close in and close in and close in. Corner this feeling of self. Corner this. Fixed feeling to the corner until there is no corner left. That's what we have to do. Because this dog will find any escape that you give it. You give it a small hole, right? Give it a small hole and it will jump through that hole. I think this sense of I, because throughout our entire journey in samsara, we've been feeling this feeling of I for so long, that we're always looking for a place to put it. That's why, you know, back in time with Buddha, people would ask, well, am I Rupa or is Rupa I? Am I Vedana or is Vedana me? Am I, and they're trying to find exactly, am I in the mind, in the body, am I somewhere else? Always trying to place you somewhere. This is why, take it and slowly attack it. This is when you have to be very honest with yourself. Because remember, this jhana nibbana is about you. We're trying to get rid of this cycle. We're trying to get rid of the cycle. The way to get rid of the cycle is only one thing. You can only get rid of this. Because remember, even this is what? All of this is what? Cause and effect. You can't get rid of effects. What can you get rid of? Causes. So you can't get rid of fear. You can't get rid of grief. You can't get rid of suffering unless you get rid of vexation. You can't get rid of vexation unless you get rid of wanting. You can't get rid of wanting unless you get rid of what? Views. See, these are wrong views. In other words, ignorance. Okay, let's just keep going, right? So corner yourself and attack. Be really honest with yourself. Look for exactly where you still feel self. That's why, you know, this is why you have like Kaya and Upasana. Because what you're doing is you feel you, and then you think, am I the body? But once you get rid of Kaya and Upasana, what else do you have? Chitta and Upasana. Dhamma and Upasana. Which is again trying to corner the self until you realize, well, no, all of this is what? A process. A process of cause and effect. Putting the cause together gives rise to the effect. So now you left with what? I want. Because at the end of the day, right? You want this, you want that, you want material. And then you realize, I don't need material. But there's always one thing that we always want. That we always want. No matter who, no matter what. Something that's common to all sentient beings. And that's this feeling of being, you know, me. I want to be someone. This feeling of ego, right? This feeling of pride. I am someone in this world. You know, give me the acknowledgement I deserve. Right? Give me this acknowledgement that I deserve. Come on, please give it to me. That's why, you know, you see, this is the danger of this, right? If you don't realize what you are looking for, if you don't realize this ignorance, if you don't realize this wanting, what will happen is this. You don't know the trap that you fall into. There is this way, right? And I'll tell you this in a very brief way, because I want you to know the danger. If you don't know how this works, what will happen is people who knows not how this works, but knows what you need, can take full advantage of you. For example, you can group people in a certain way. For example, some people, they have this strong desire to be acknowledged. Some people have a strong fear of failure. Some people, they have a strong, you know, desire for something. And if a person can find out exactly what you want, they can take full advantage of you. How? All they need is to be able to supply it on and off. For example, if you need to be acknowledged, if you are someone who has a very inferior mindset, and if you, what you are looking for, what you desire most in life is to be acknowledged, all another person needs to do is to give you some sort of acknowledgement once, and then ignore you. And then give it again some other in a week or so, again. And then ignore you. On and off, on and off. What will happen is, you, without you knowing, that person can become, I think that the best way to describe it, can become like a drug. Because why? What are they doing? They're fulfilling your deepest desire. Fulfilling your deepest desire, right? So I want to feel acknowledged, and this person is making me feel acknowledged. On and off. So what you don't realize is you start building this massive connection, a dependency to this person. Now you cannot live without it. You can be addicted. Same thing with the fear of failure. If you're someone who, if you don't know this, but you're someone who's always scared of failing, a person can take that for their advantage. If you're someone who has a deep desire for something, people use that to their advantage. In good and bad ways. This is why we have to save ourselves before we fall into these traps. To understand what is it that we actually want. Why do I want what I want? Is that the true path? Is that truly going to make me happy? Or am I under this illusion that this is what's going to make me happy? So come back to acknowledgement. Why do I want to feel acknowledged? Because I feel what? Me. I feel that I am important. Then what is I? Or who is I? Who am I? Then you answer the question by saying, okay, I am, my name is this. I do this job. I live here. I am X years old. Are those who you are? Is that you? Or is that what belongs to you? See, is your name you? See, it's very nice, right? Because we are born with a name. The moment you're born, your mother or father comes to you and says, okay, your name is this. And then for most people, you keep that name for the rest of your life. That name is so-called yours. But yet, throughout your life, you get nicknames. And that nickname becomes what? Mine. Right? Once you get married, now you have more nicknames. Good and bad. And now, those nicknames are also what? Mine. So if someone calls you darling, or someone calls you, potato, both of them are me. So you're now calling me, but I also have another name. So which name is you? See, it's not you name, is it? Do you say you name? What is you name? No, you say, what is your name? Because that name belongs to you. But what about my age? You know, I am X years old. I am 20, 30, 40, 50 years old. Then that belongs to me, right? Well, your age depends where? Depends on... Well, your age actually depends on many things. Your age depends on not just the time of your birth. Because when... There are massive arguments on when life starts. Some people say the moment you come out of the womb. Some people say the moment you're conceived. Some people have the moment your brain is formed. So when does life start? The different people will have different opinions. So when is your actual birthday? And it also depends on where you live. You live on Earth, you are, say, 30 years old, right? You live on the moon, now you have 30, but then also you have every 28 days, the moon rotates, orbits the Earth, and then there's going to be some weird time difference. You live on Venus, now you're extremely young. You live on Mars, you'll be extremely old, sorry. You live on Mars, now you'll be extremely young, right? 30 on Earth would be 100 and something on Venus, but also 5 something for Mars. So your age is also what? Dependent. So is the age you or age yours? You age or your age? So you start thinking, well, if those stuff are mine, okay. And then we can say that everything else outside is all either belongs to me or doesn't belong to me. But it isn't what is mine. Again, whether something belongs to you or doesn't belong to you, that's a different topic. This is the thing. What the Buddha does, he just gives you no options. This belongs to you? Well, actually, does this really belong to you? That's what the Buddha does. He gives you no options, okay? Everything outside your body isn't you. Then the body is you. That's why you look in a photograph and you say, oh, look, it's me, I'm in the photo. So is how you look you? One day you're sleeping, other person, someone comes and cuts your hair off. Do you lose part of you? But your image, your appearance changes. Are you now you or not you? Okay, let's say, God forbid, let's say you grow a tumor. Do you feel more of you growing or what? How does that work? Is that part of you, or is that you, or what is that? Because now your image changes. Are you now more you or less of you? Because more you meaning that because an extra part is growing, right? A tumor is growing, therefore you have more of you, but then you're ruining your image is changing, so are you getting less of you now? Which one? Well, today you have 20/20 vision, tomorrow you need glasses. Are you changing you? Today you can hear very well, tomorrow you have to wear a hearing aid. Are you changing you? So what part of the body is you? And one of the best arguments is, okay, your hand. Is it you hand or your hand? It's your hand. It's not you, it's yours. That's why, right? You know, say something happens to your hand. Let's say you burnt your hand to an unrecoverable state. You could get, you know, a bionic, you know, a mechanical hand. It will still work. But why do you feel that you've lost part of you? Or do you feel you lost part of your body? So the feeling of you is constant. No matter what happens, the feeling of you is always constant. So why do I feel that? Why do I feel me? Well, not only that, right? Now, we also know that the things around us is also cause and effect. We also know that. So, for example, if I put three causes together, I'm just going to put one, two, three causes together. You tell me if there's something that's not three lines has been formed. So what I'm going to do is put these three causes together, right? No more than three lines. Ready? One, two, three. What do you see? But I didn't draw a triangle. I drew three lines. Fine. I'm going to draw another three lines. Right? So six lines in general. I drew six lines. You better not tell me I drew six lines. I didn't draw anything but six lines. What do you see? I drew six lines. See, one, two, three, four, five, six. Where did the house come from? All I want to do is draw six lines. Ready? Six lines. Six lines. Did I draw any more than six lines? What do you see? Six lines? Six lines. I drew six lines. I didn't draw a hexagon. But don't you see that there's a hexagon there? Don't you see that there's a house there? Don't you see that there's something more beyond my six lines? There's something that has been almost created. That there's something different, or there's something more than six lines. So it's almost as though I put three lines together and I made a triangle. If I made a triangle, can I remove my three lines and keep the triangle? Can I remove those three lines and keep the triangle? I wish, right? Just think, imagine that's possible. You can put causes together and have a separate effect. How much money you could save, right? You put the causes together and you get a bouquet. Then you could remove the flowers and keep the bouquet. And then make another one. And make hundreds. But that's not how it works. How does it work? When the three causes came together, you have now what? The effect of what? Triangle. But why? Okay. All I'm going to do is write three letters. Right, three random letters. Right, three random letters. Right, that's all I'm gonna do. Right. Literally, I just got rid of C, A, B, C, and just switched to letters. You now see what? Did I create bed? Was bed, is there actually bed there? Or are these the three causes coming together? That's why I can change this and say, oh. Where did bed go? How did bed become bad? It's a bad bed. Where did bed go? Did bed go anywhere? No, when the three causes, when one of the causes no longer is in the equation, the effect, it now doesn't manifest the same way, it manifests differently. For example, bad. Dad. Do you want more examples? Do you want more examples? See, this proves I went to school. Dig. And you can go on and on and on and on. Did I create big, or did I make big? If big was made, how can I change it? All I have to do is take one letter off and change letter, and now you feel something completely different. Big and bag, are they similar? Is big and bag similar? They are almost worlds apart. One of them is an adjective, one of them is a noun. But yeah, you feel that, no. That was big, now it's bag. Where did that feeling come from? That feeling of fixedness. Where did that come from? Big became bag. Or did bag come from big? Where from bag did big come from? Where did big go? Or where will bag go next? Where will bag go next? What will bag turn into? So the entire world is what? Cause and effect. It's literally the causes coming together that gives rise to manifestation. Now, this is, I think when it comes to like words and images, it's very obvious, right? You can see the three causes, right? You can say, oh, right, there are six lines here, there are six lines here as well, and that's B, A, G. We can see the causes. But everything here, like this seems to be a pretty hard object that looks as though it doesn't have any what? Any? It looks as though it's a fixed object. Have we also know that this itself is what? This itself is what? Causes. It's a manifestation. Manifestation, different causes. This is why, you know, you could literally, all you have to do is add one cause, and this will change its form. That cause could be anything. For example, I put this in an oven. Will it still stay in this duster shape? Will the duster be a duster after that? It'll be a puddle of plastic and, well, this will probably burn off. It'd be a puddle of plastic. Okay, I take that puddle of plastic and I drop some nitric acid on it. Now what? Now you'll see smoke coming off it. And it's not going to change its form. So even these tough, like these hard objects, these are also what? But yet, why do we feel that this is a fixed duster? That it's an object, it's an entity. Why do we still feel this to be an entity? Because in this same equation, this same model, there's a bit more that goes beyond here. This is all there, but it has to be pushed a bit more, right? It has to be a bit pushed at this side a bit more. Because what also happens is, the mind is still under a lot of vexation for something different, for this idea of something to be separate from the world. Now, we know, you know, Guru Handuru and our teachers have given this idea of, you know, this pure energy. Now, you know, you can have 101 questions about pure energy, but, you know, it isn't important. But what's important is this idea that everything can be broken down into a very pure state. And not just, you know, it's not just pure energy that we're talking about, you know, and even in quantum mechanics, right, in quantum physics, they talk about this as well. You have theories like string theory, you have, I don't know, what do you call those, like field theories and whatnot. All they're saying is everything comes from a very uniform, when I mean uniform, it's not a uniform, but a very pure state. Everything comes from that. That's why, you know, you can break this down into protons, neutrons, electrons, right? We learned in chemistry. You can break down protons further. I'm not going to get into physics, but you can break this down into further. You can break down electrons further, and you can break down everything. But we know if we keep breaking them down, the difference between a proton and a neutron and the difference between a neutron and an electron will be the same. So this is a manifestation of these causes. These you can almost say that the duster is an arrangement of this pure energy in a different form. That's why this will not forever be a duster. This will forever not be a duster. Why? Tomorrow, let's say a child drops in and breaks. It's swept up and it's thrown into a bin. And then it's recycled to become a toothbrush. So did the duster become a toothbrush? Or did this energy just change its form? When I mean change its form, I don't mean like it changed any sort of way. It's just differently arranged. Just like when you can differently arrange this. If I was to differently arrange this, you can say gap. You can differently arrange this as well and say ab. But same causes, differently arranged. Same with this. So why do we still feel that, no, even though, you know, it's like that, but everything around us is fixed. Why do we still feel that? And that's because the mind also wants what? Has because for something to happen, the mind must want it. So the mind wants what? Something fixed. Because the mind wants something fixed, what happens is it wants? Oh, the mind has the idea that something's fixed, therefore it wants. Because it wants, now it vexes. Now, the mind is looking for something that is not there. The mind is looking for something that is not there. is looking for something that is not part, that's not from pure energy. Something that is not the manifestation of pure energy. Something that's fixed. Something that's unchanging. And now, if you continue to search for something that's not there, what would happen? If you continue to search for something that's not there, what will happen? Either you give up, or you pretend. Pretend as though it's there. In other words, you have this feeling that it's there. When vexation increases and increases and increases, what will happen is the mind will find its way to get rid of this vexation. Because the mind isn't yours. The mind doesn't belong to you. What does it belong? Who does it belong to? Who does your mind belong to? Who? Your mind is part of nature. Now, nature has a quality that it's always trying to come back to its a very stable form. Vexation is unstable. Now you know this, right? When a small child is crying and really wants something, the child is very unstable. You don't know what the child's gonna do. Same thing with the mind. The mind always looks to become. The mind always tries to come to a very stable way. But vexation is creating ripples, creating this really unstable state. Therefore, the mind tries to bring it back down. For that to happen, the mind has created... the mind uses a process which we call abhisankara. Abhisankara meaning it makes it feel as though what it's looking for is there. It makes it feel that, oh, okay, I've got it. So we call it insanity, right? So, see, the word insanity sounds very harsh. Because, if you call someone insane, right? In a very professional, in a very formal environment, that's a very harsh thing to say because it means that you've gone insane. But it is, you've gone insane. You're feeling something to be there that's not there. You're feeling that a house was created when I only drew 6 lines. And because of insanity, now you have this feeling of fixedness, a feeling of a difference, something separate from everything else, from this pure state. And we call that what?
Jad.
Now we have jati.
What that happens?
Because of jati, now you're vexing for the thing that's going to make you happy. Then pressure, all that comes afterwards. But this is the thing that makes us feel that, no. I am here. These are all here, and this is what's going to make me happy. Now, it all roots from the same place. It all roots in the same place. The whole root is what? Ignorance. So, the only thing that we can do, and the only thing that we must do is what? Get rid of ignorance. See, this is when you realize that no matter what you feel, everything is rooted in ignorance. Okay, you feel angry. You feel sad. You feel upset. I think one of the best things you'll start to realize, right? Once you start going through this, one thing you start to realize is all the problems that you feel are just what? Felt. Because going through in life, because, you know, a synonym for life itself is what? Problems. A synonym for life is problems. Because what is life? A problem after a problem after a problem after a problem. That's what life is. You can never go beyond that. Even for an arahant. Life is what? There'll be one problem after another problem after another problem. But it's not the issue. The issue is what? These problems become my problems. So I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm sad. You know, they're doing something to me. They're isolating me. They are going against me. Why are they doing this to me? See, once you realize that, you know, problems are there. But there is no my problem. The problems are there. But none of those problems are my problems. That itself, because you realize that this feeling of me is what? Just a feeling. This sense of self is just a sense. Not that there is a fixed identity, a fixed sentient being. No, it's just a feeling. Just like I feel this is my pen and I feel this is your pen, we swap. No, these pens don't belong to either one of us. But yet I feel this is my pen and I feel this is your pen. Because I feel this is my pen, now if something happens to this pen, I'm upset. But let's say this belongs to your enemy. This pen is now, you see this pen on the floor, cracked, broken. Now you're happy that it's broken because it belongs to your enemy. But these pens don't even know who it belongs to. Does this pen know it's yours? Does this pen know it belongs to your enemy? No, a pen is a pen. Not my pen nor your pen. These are both, you know, both results or manifestations of this, of causes. There's no difference between them. So why are you happy when something happens to this one, and why are you unhappy when something happens to this one? It's a sense. The problems that you face, you make it big. Honestly, what happens is we overthink, and we make such small problems so big, and it weighs on our two shoulders, pulling us down. It weighs on our two shoulders, pulling us down, because we have so many problems in life, don't we? That's why. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Meaning what? Come and drop all that. Drop all that weight that you're holding. Because your problems are just problems, not yours. You've made it yours. Now it's a big weight on your shoulders, and it's weighing you down. You're carrying extra baggage. Drop them. Put it aside. Because now once you don't have weight on your shoulders, now it's easy to solve. Now it's an easy solve. But until you feel that these are your problems, until you feel that this is not Jati, but this is me, this is my stuff, these are all happening to me, now you have weight on your shoulders. Pulling you down. See, there is a path for you to take this weight off your shoulders. A path for you to live freely. But yet, in this world where the understanding of the truth is hidden, We're just shackling ourselves and pulling ourselves down and down with more and more weight. With more and more weight. I mean, why do we put ourselves through that much? When there's a perfect way to get rid of all of this extra weight, why do we put ourselves through all this weight? And why do we want to carry all this? When all you have to do is put it down. Put it down. You know, all that, the heavy problems that you have on you, put them down. Put it to a side. Or else you're suffering so unnecessarily. You are going through so much unnecessary amount of suffering. You know, cut yourself some slack. Right? And let yourself be truly happy. And let yourself be truly happy. Start to remove the weight. It's heavy. I know it's heavy. The problems that you face, I know they are heavy. Therefore, put them down. Take it off. This is why I myself and so does every single person who live and breathe, and well, all of you as well. We strongly believe that everyone truly deserves to be happy. Don't you? I mean, we've all lived way too long, doing way too much stuff in order to be happy, but never received it. Don't you think that we deserve to be happy? That's the thing. The only way to truly be happy is by understanding the world around us, understanding why we are feeling what we are feeling, understanding, that's the way. So what can I do to be happy? It's not the question you should be asking. What do I need to understand to be happy? That's the question you should be asking. Because no matter what you do or you don't do, that's not what's going to make you happy or sad. It's how you feel, how you perceive it. What are your views on it? That's what creates it. So think about this, right? So we did take almost like a massive, you say, a whistle stop tour. Starting with pleasure, ending with jati. There is so much more. There is so much more to this. I think that is the beauty of the truth. The more you understand, the more you realize how much you don't know. I think that's a quote that Albert Einstein says, right? A wise person will always know how much they don't know. Because the truth is deep. The truth is the truth, but it's also very deep. You can keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. For example, you could probably talk about ignorance for the rest of eternity and still not know exactly what ignorance is. You can talk about vexation for the rest of eternity, but still not understand what vexation truly is. Because we don't need to go that far. What we need to do is what? use what the tools we have, right? The minimal tools that we have to get the small jobs done and then get out. I mean, no matter what, there are so much more. I mean, we didn't even talk about anatta or dukkha. We mostly focused on anicca. Dukkha, anatta, we'll talk about maybe next time. I mean, dukkha is also here. Anatta is also here. But we didn't focus a lot on it. But what we can do, well, we will talk about more about this as well. But like I said, the Dhamma is showing us the truth of the world. I was talking to someone the other day, and they're telling me, you know what? You know, sorry, Nazim, I want to, you know, I think she wants to get a PhD in something, right? Why? Because I want to go to space. Right? I want to research about space. Because I want to know the secret of the universe. And I said, good. You do that. Right? You can go and you know, work at NASA, right? Trying to find every nook and cranny of the universe to find this secrets of the universe. But I told her, you'll end up exactly where you started. Here. Because the secret of the universe is already in your hands. All you have to do is look. Right. Something that I did want to tell you all that literally, I think 2 days ago, we started another Pandu program. And trust me, I was as surprised as you are. Another Pandu program. We're going to have another ordinary ceremony in 2 months. And I think when I found out that we got another Pandu program, what I realized is how many people are striving to do this. And how each and every one of us have made an effect. Because these people, they were, first of all, devotees, coming to the monastery, seeing all of you, and, you know, one day they decided, you know what? Maybe coming here, staying here is the best thing. Understanding Dhamma is the best thing. Then they come and stay a year, and they think, oh, maybe ordination is the right thing. So, you know, I was just as surprised as you. I was like, oh, and we got another Pandu program with, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think another 14 individuals. So, yeah. This journey to Nibbana is because, you know, we are all on the journey to Nibbana. And what is most amazing is how, you know, it is spreading as well. You know, like they say, there are three things you can't keep hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth. Right? The truth of the universe, the truth of yourselves, right? Of how the world, or the truth of the world, basically, is slowly coming up, right? That's why, you know, Guru Hamdru says, just wait. Just wait. The future is going to be something that's going to be something to look forward to. With bad things as well. He's also said bad things. But, you know, hopefully by the end of all of our lives, we'll be able to see hundreds of thousands of Arjanas on this planet itself. And that's definitely something to look forward to, right? Hundreds of thousands of arhats. Never in the recent history have we ever seen so much. So we have so that is something that I really want to tell you all as well. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receiving of these teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's chant the message of Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's all take one chance and message to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief leaders of chapters who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to benefit to all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's all take one chance and message to Gusan Nase, as well as the monks resident in the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Agarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby transliterating sermons, sharing them with others, inviting others to join them, may the power merits, if any of them born in the worldly planes, may they redeem themselves in born in the rest of the planes, may by the power merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So take a moment to transfer merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who contributed to the construction of the monastery, those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, or medicines, as well as those who pass on no hacks and no well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to answer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way they could. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who committed to protect and fulfill the sum of the sasanam. Let's all take one chance of merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye of us and keep us out of harm's way. May they power these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one chance of merits to our ancestors who predeceased us, to all those who have been friends and family to us in acquaintances in this infinite long journey in Sansara. In any way, let's take one chance of merits to all those members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of your nation. May all those lost life in the war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take one chance of merits to all those who lost their life in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them. Or be those who have been friends of family to us in this infinite long journey in Sansara. Let's take one chance of merits to them. May the power of the merits, may the If any of them have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blessed plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired for the day. We even witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuvanses, Arhat Mahin Nuvanses, on this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired for the day. You and I and everyone who made this program a success become a Arhat Nuvanse or a Arhat Mahin Nuvanse in this very life, in the era of the Gautama, Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Chupacham be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnin bhidatnva Dvesha ginnin bhidatnva Moha ginnin bhidatnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo
निम्भान परम सुखयन सुकित तारवित्वा निम्भान परम सुखयन सुकित तारवित्वा निम्भान परम सुखयन सुकित तारवित्वा राग घिनी निवेवा द्वेष घिनी निवेवा मोह घिनी निवेवा निवंसप लभेवा निवंसप लभेवा निवान सप लभेवा तुन्नोंगे सुसियान द महागुण बलेन सिर लोक सिर सत्यों में निम्भान पमेसुकें सुधे